This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Hope you got your sufficient servings of basketball yesterday. Because you better be ready. You better purge. You got to purge. Because today there's more stuffing for you. There's more hoops today.
You get right back up at it.
That's it, man.
You got to purge any non-essential items in your brain and just focus on your brackets, damn it.
That's it, man. That is it.
So I don't know if it sounds like I'm groggy, like I am or not. I'm trying real hard not to. I had a rough night's sleep last night because I had a nightmare. And I know why. Yeah, I knew why I had that Laramie Tunsil nightmare last week.
Yeah.
Sometime yesterday afternoon, I said out loud, you know what? I think maybe I'm going to get rid of my smartphone. I'm tired of it. I need less distraction in my life. I'm just going to get a flip phone for emergencies only. And then, of course, sometime around 1 a.m., I had a dream that I was traveling and there were complications and I didn't have a phone. So I was waiting in line to try to, I was waiting in line on hold on my flip phone, but trying to talk to anybody. So I was waiting in line at customer service to do something that would have easily been handled on my smartphone.
Yeah.
And then by some weird stretch of circumstance, I ended up having to use a rental smartphone. And I don't think they exist, but it was like, you remember in high school, where they'd hand out calculators or something, but they were calculators from 1975.
Oh, yeah.
It was like that. It was like a 1975 version of a smartphone.
Yeah.
You have huge, clunky, plasticky, dirty and everything. And so I woke up in a panic, heart rate 155 at least, and couldn't go back to sleep. And so, but then I did go back to sleep, and was one of the rare times that my alarm woke me up this morning.
Really?
My timeline's a little screwed up.
Me too, man. I slept through the night last night. It was good. And I think a big part of that was I watched the basketball at home yesterday. You know, typically Thursday has been a, hey, get done what you need to get done, and now let's go out and perch ourselves somewhere and watch the basketball. And you know, I'm inclined to make a lot of bad decisions when I do that, when I get in that environment. I stayed at home yesterday. I've got the setup to where I can watch at least three of the games.
You make bad decisions when you're at home?
No. When I go out.
Okay, when you do it the normal way.
I go out, when I do it the normal way. No. When I stayed home and made a lot of good decisions yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, stayed away from the booze, ate some good food. Amy made a fairly nutritious dinner for us. So I feel good, man. If you're groggy at all today, don't worry. I got you. I got your back.
Everybody, and if you're one of these people that have decided to get your vasectomy before March Madness begins, hey, get your vasectomy and then just sit on the couch for 72 hours.
That's what I did.
That's what you did back in the, not yesterday.
No.
But back in the day.
No, 2002.
You didn't go and get a second vasectomy for nostalgia's sake or anything?
I made the joke after I got the first one I would go get one every year if it meant I could just sit on the couch with nobody bothering me for the first 3 days of the tournament. Now keep in mind, when I got mine done, I had 2 4-year-olds and a 3-year-old.
Ooh.
That love to just crowd around old pops, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I said that at the time, not that I love my kids and I've loved them from the day they were born, but there are certain times a year where it's like, hey man, just give me these 3 days.
They have zero respect for the male anatomy.
Exactly.
It's really They're like sociopaths in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand or care about how you might be feeling.
That's right.
As a human.
That's right.
And they just wail away at every single part of your body. Yeah.
When I did that back in 2002, it was not part of like a trend or a theme of doing that. I was just I thought it was my idea at the time, you know? Like but now it's a thing. Like I am a little surprised that we've never gotten at our station a urologist to do endorsements for, at least for the month of March.
We did, actually.
Did we?
We did.
Okay,
yeah, I was doing one for a while back when. Yeah,
must have been before I got here. Why haven't we done it again? It feels like it's a good idea. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe you didn't
Partly because March Madness isn't as all-encompassing and all-consuming as it used to be. It's still a big deal, but it's not as much of a...
Yeah.
It doesn't dominate the way... Jose Altuve in left field is more pressing in the minds of the average sports fan right now than March Madness.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Hey, by the way, I got my new City Connect. It's a batting practice hat. Jason
Wooden.
That's
nice. I like the batting practice hat is better than the actual. The only complaint I've seen so far, and I've started to agree with this complaint, is that the new City Connect uniforms are awesome. Much cleaner, better looking, everything than the old ones. But the hat, the logo on the hat feels almost like a little bit gimmicky, or it just feels like something that the Avalanche or somebody out west would do.
Well,
feels a little bit like I just don't quite like the hat. That batting practice hat is nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a choice between the two, and I chose this one. I chose this one because I felt it was a little more unique, realizing right afterwards, I'm like, well, you can buy both in the store. Neither are all that unique. They're going to sell as many of each as they possibly can. The complaint I've seen about the logo is it looks too much like the Diamondbacks logo. That's what I've seen.
That's what I was trying to think out west. It was the Diamondbacks. So, but almost like, because the A almost looks like it's trying to be a mountain.
It's tilted.
So it reminds me of the Denver airport.
Yeah.
I think that's why. Did I say Avalanche? Rockies. My God.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've got hockey on the brain.
It's okay.
Because a Houston billionaire wants to buy the.
Freakin',
Wants to bring
us hockey.
A hockey to us.
Yep. Yeah, we'll get to that. I got my lid,
I'll get
man.
The sports right eventually. Just give me until about 8 or 9, okay?
It's cool. You've prefaced the whole show by saying you didn't get a great night's sleep last night. Of course, it was all started with the silly idea, not in a dream state, of getting rid of your smartphone. You think you could get rid of your smartphone?
No, I think the dream told me I probably couldn't. I travel too much.
Yeah.
For flying alone, I need it.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to restrict my access to my smartphone more and just only use it when I'm traveling or just out in a situation where I need it for computing purposes.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Dana Brown on the Astros team show last night, on Astro Line last night on our competitor station regarding Cam Smith, quote, and we're getting down to it. It's 6 days till opening day. Like, this is not late February talk here. Like, if he's being serious about what I'm about to say, then we could see Cam Smith in the big leagues. He said, Seth, quote, make no mistake, I'm not afraid to put this guy in the big leagues, talking about Cam Smith.
He heard our Are You Yella segment.
Yeah.
Where we asked him if he was Yella or not. And he said, oh, you think I'm Yella? I think I'm Yella? No, I'll put him out there.
You and I like doing this game. Do you think when somebody prefaces a sentence with make no mistake, it makes it more serious, or is he posing a little bit here?
Make no mistake.
Yeah. I'm not afraid. I'm picturing him wagging his finger while he's doing it, too. Make no mistake. I'm not afraid to put this guy in the big leagues.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
His track record says he's not afraid to put guys in the big leagues.
Right, yeah. I don't think that. And it's so it doesn't feel like false bravado or anything.
Right, right.
Or somebody adamantly claiming that they don't care about something, which is usually an indicator that they care deeply about it. I think he probably, which is more badass too, make no mistake can sound like something that somebody's like doing that same thing, almost making up for a lack of confidence. With him, I think he delivers it more like an assassin, kind of like, make no mistake. Yeah. I've done this before. He sounds like a godfather telling you that he's not afraid to kill somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if I say, listen, I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty and kill somebody, you know I'm full of crap.
Right.
I'm still a little bit scared of killing somebody.
Right, a little bit.
Still kind of intrigued, but still mostly scared.
Yeah.
And, but like if a godfather tells you, make no bones about it, make no mistake, I will kill this foreman, then that's how Dana Brown does it.
Cam Smith, let's pretend he makes the big league roster. What is the main emotion Seth Payne feels in, when we see the tweet that Cam Smith... Because if he makes the roster, he is starting at either third base or right field. That's a fact.
I'm doing this. I'm rubbing my hands together. I'm like,
you're excited.
This will be fun. Yeah, this is going to be fun. I'm not overly worried or concerned about anything, because the other thing about Dana Brown is he doesn't look like he's too concerned either about the old school notion of, oh no, what if we bring him up and it doesn't work out? His psyche will be damaged forever. Because, okay, listen, this is the same way I feel about quarterbacks when people think, well, no, you can't draft a quarterback because then the young quarterback, the starting quarterback might feel like he has competition. If your starting quarterback isn't improved by competition or a threat, then he's not the right guy to begin with.
Yeah.
So, likewise, I don't think you elevate a guy unless you also feel like, hey, if he really struggles and we got to send him back down to Double A. And in this instance, it wouldn't even be sending him back down to Astros Double A. He's never been there before.
Right.
There's no hesitation there. So I get excited about it because it's not going to be. The downside would be, okay, Cam Smith comes up and it turns out he needs more seasoning. No big deal. Whereas some of the old school notions would be, oh no, he'll he's just got a tender spirit and he needs to be coddled or whatever. Dana Brown's not like that.
At this stage, the excitement would counterbalance any other feelings I have early in the season. I would be super excited about it. From a baseball standpoint, my concern would be that you are almost by definition, if he's on the team, he's going to start at either third base or right field on a regular basis. Dana Brown has said that. We're not going to bring him up here, and he's going to be a part-timer. Wherever Cam Smith is, because you could argue he's the most important player in the organization right now. You can make an argument about that. He's the big piece they got back in the Kyle Tucker trade. He is the one guy with a future that they've still got 6 years of control over. And he's a former first-round pick who's got huge, huge upside. So if he makes the team, he's going to start. You are, by definition, in all likelihood, creating another defensive Achilles heel on your team by having him in the everyday lineup. He can play third base just fine, but Paredes is going to have to move over to second, where he's not a natural second baseman. Cam Smith plays right field. He's not played right field before. So you've got two-thirds of your starting outfield having never played a Major League Baseball game in the position, not just in the position in the outfield that they're in the outfield, period.
Right.
Like Jose Altuve, it's not like Jose Altuve was a center fielder his whole career. Now his legs are getting a little bit shot, so they move him to a corner spot so he doesn't have to cover as much ground. He's been a second baseman his whole career, and not even a really good second baseman the last couple of years.
Right. So that's the trepidation part, and it's going to be a whole lot of... You'll probably, in that scenario, lose at least a couple of games specifically because of your defense and your corner outfield positions. And the Astros know that. It won't be often, but it'll be a moment where, oh, wow, there was a run allowed because of an error in right field or an inadequate throw out of left field or whatever it might be. But they just feel like the offense offsets it that much that they know that that's going to happen. And there will be other times where, hey, they win games because of the offense of those guys. I guess if that were to be the case, I'd have to look at an over-under on, all right, when do I stop trying to be Joe Cool baseball fan that just like, hey, no, it's a long season. When do I stop being, hey, it's 162 games, you got to give this time? Would it be 6 weeks into the season? If the defense doesn't improve out of either of those guys or both of those guys by 6 weeks into the season, is that when I start to panic a little bit?
I think this is kind of a cop-out answer, but I think it depends on how the team's doing as a whole. Like, if they're winning games, then if they're winning games, and especially in this division, if they get out to a nice lead where the division doesn't have any real killers in it, then I think you just roll with it. The only way they're going to get better is to keep playing. That's the thing, you know?
Right.
You know? So I think it depends on how the team is doing.
That was a tough thing with Altuve in spring training when you started was, man, okay, he's not really getting anything hit to him. But the only way for him to get game experience at this point is spring training. Espada said yesterday Espada said on Wednesday that Altuve is going to play most of his games in left field.
This season.
So, I mean, for anybody wondering, because I don't know if we necessarily clarified it the way we should have, it's not an experiment any longer.
No, he's going to play.
This is the plan they're going with, with Altuve at least.
This is the way. And yet he didn't play yesterday. Like, he needs to get as many reps as he can, man. I don't care. He's 35 years old. He needs to play left field. All right, off and running on a Friday. Got a lot of stuff to get to. We'll get to the March Madness for sure. We got headlines coming up later this hour. Drew Doherty has his fourth version of the mock draft roundup out. And there is a big shakeup post-Tunsil trade and post-free agency for who the experts think the Texans are going to be drafting with the 25th overall pick. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studio, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Big shakeup at the top of the mock draft world. Thank God we have Drew Doherty out here doing the Lord's work, collecting collecting all 56 accredited mock drafts. Who are they accredited by? The Mock Draft Bureau of Payne and Pendergast and Drew Doherty. Yeah. 56 mock drafts. For those of you who have not seen this before, you can find it. Drew Doherty, who writes for the Texans, it's on HoustonTexans.com. He rounds up all the mock drafts. There's more and more as draft season rolls on. He's up to 56 of them that he's put into the mix here. And it's pretty simple. He looks and sees who all 56 of these people have the Texans taking at 25th overall. And it's the idea is that it gives you a direction as to where the Texans might be going with that pick. And it feels like one of the two names that's tied at the top here, Seth, both Ohio State guys, worth noting, both played with C.J. Stroud at one point. But of the two names, there is one that has seemed to have popped up ever since the Laramie Tunsil trade, and maybe it simmers down now that they've signed Cam Robinson for a year. Who knows? But Josh Simmons and Emeka Ebuka, wide receiver, are the leaders. They are the Texans selection in 11 of these 56 mock drafts.
This is really interesting, because if you just take these two players, if you have to choose between Ebuka and Simmons, Ebuka is not as electrifyingly athletic as a lot of the other wide receivers that might be available at 25. Locally, Matthew Golden would be the name that most people would point to. But he is off the charts in the Will Anderson personality side of things.
Yeah.
People at Ohio State gush about him the way people at Alabama gushed about Will Anderson when it came to the leadership side of things, his core constitution. He is that guy. He's also probably more pro-ready mentally than a lot of other prospects at wide receiver. Ohio State does a lot more stuff that translates to the NFL in terms of reading coverages, adjusting routes, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So all that. But then on the other side of the spectrum, you have Josh Simmons, who really he does some really impressive things athletically and physically that look like, okay, this is a guy that could adapt to the NFL really well. And yet he also has, at the very least, Todd McShay says there might be maturity issues. I always take those with a huge grain of salt, because you don't know exactly how that gets filtered through and what it means. Sometimes guys had maturity issues 2 years ago, and then Ryan Day has some conversations with him, and kind of like C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud will credit Ryan Day for really helping his maturation process. So that's where it all depends on what D'Amico Ryans really feels about Josh Simmons, and if there are indeed any actual maturity issues, what type were they?
Yeah.
Because sometimes maturity issues can mean a million different things. Sometimes it can mean that, the guy's just a jerk. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about that. Other times it's that, he was a kid. He maybe had different expectations about showing up on time and everything that they gave him a talking to, and he fixed it.
Yeah.
You flat out don't know. That's where D'Amico's ability to maybe kind of get a feel for a guy, and then what does C.J. Stroud feel about him? What does C.J. Stroud have a ringing endorsement for him? I have no idea. So for me, if the Texans decide that he's swarm worthy, then okay, cool. I trust their assessment. Then the huge question is, he's coming off a torn patellar tendon, and that is a dicey, dicey injury.
Yeah.
When it comes to NFL players in general, it's not. It's still kind of like Achilles tendon tears used to be. It's hit or miss sometimes how well a guy comes back from patellar tendon tear.
I'm way more concerned. If they were to draft Josh Simmons, I would not be as over the moon as I would over some of the other prospects, because of what you just said about it's way more about the patellar tendon thing to me than the maturity stuff. Look, 18 and 19-year-olds in general have maturity issues. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So And the other thing about the maturity thing with McShay and him reporting that, not that McShay is very plugged in. I believe that. But with something like that, unless he heard that from six people,
yeah.
If he just heard it from one person, then I take that with a grain of salt. I always take something with a grain of salt that's told by somebody through a one-person filter. I need to know more about that person. I need to know as much about that person as I do about Josh Simmons. You know, what's their definition of maturity? What exactly was it about Simmons? What did he do? Was it something specific? Was it a vibe that that was pervasive throughout? Or was it a specific incident? I need to know more about that. So the maturity thing, I'm totally with you on the maturity thing. Okay, what exactly was it? And the trust that D'Amico and Nick are going to vet that part of it properly.
And I don't think after they swap Laremy Tunsil out and for a multitude of reasons, as it always is with these things. Yeah. But Laremy Tunsil was not as great as he is as a pass protector. He doesn't have that swarm mentality necessarily. He doesn't really like to practice all that often. All those things. I don't think the Texans take Josh Simmons unless they 100% aren't worried about Josh Simmons' maturity.
Yes.
Or anything on the off-field side of things. So I'd be okay with that part. But yeah, I'm going to be really nervous, especially because they drafted Kenyon Green when Kenyon Green was injured and then went on to have multiple injury issues for several years. Now, Simmons says he's going to do his pro day, which has got to be coming up here very quickly, right?
Yeah, it's got to be.
And a lot of people are wondering, okay, I don't know if that's that smart a thing to do. But if he looks awesome at his pro day, that's a pretty positive sign.
There.
That could be That could be a huge swinger in some of the mock drafts if he shows up and looks like he was never injured at all at his pro day. Because it would also suggest that, hey, the guy must have attacked his rehab pretty well.
Yep.
Whatever maturity concerns anybody might have, man, he's ahead of schedule on his patellar tendon surgery.
Attacked his rehab well, which would be a very mature thing to do. Yes.
Yes.
No question. So Ibuka, 11 mocks. Josh Simmons, 11 mocks in the mock draft roundup out of 56. Next on the list, pretty big drop-off after those two. The next up is 6 mocks for the former leader of this exercise. Mock draft roundup 3.0 had Tyler Booker of Alabama. I'm guessing, without looking at all these mock drafts, because Drew just lists the 56 mock drafts with who they have the Texans taking. You know, there's no way, unless you click on all of them, there's no way to tell who all got picked from 1 through 32. I'm guessing that the reason that the number of times Tyler Booker is getting mocked to the Texans has decreased has nothing to do with a negative about Tyler Booker. It's actually the opposite. I'm guessing he seems to be going a lot higher in these drafts than he was before.
He didn't work out well, but I think guards, people worry less about that, the overall athleticism for guards than they do tackles.
Yeah.
I guess the question just is also, if he didn't have a great workout and he plays a position that you usually only draft a guard in the top 15 if you really slam dunk feel awesome about that dude. Yeah. I think there's still a chance that he's close to 25, but probably with the athletic reservations and everything, I think they probably, people look at him as like somewhere 15 through 20, he'll be gone.
Yeah.
And then it's a question of, okay, do the Texans like him as much to where he becomes kind of a muted version of Will Anderson because he comes from Alabama, because they look at him at Alabama like a guy that, man, really sets the tone from a leadership standpoint and everything. Do the Texans feel that it's justified to jump up a few spots to get Tyler Booker?
Okay, let's pretend for a second that they stay at 25. And let's also pretend that any concerns over Josh Simmons' maturity and his knee have been addressed. They're comfortable with Josh Simmons physically and emotionally as a prospect. And we know they're probably comfortable with Tyler Booker on all those things. Who would you take between a healthy Josh Simmons and Tyler Booker if you were the Texans?
Oh, I would take Tyler Booker.
You would take Tyler Booker.
Still. Yeah, I think that's healthy, 100% healthy.
Healthy,
Josh Simmons.
That's what I'm saying. Like Josh Simmons, to me, until we know more about that knee, he would be an off the board for me until I'm comfortable with the knee. But let's pretend that he's draftable and he's healthy And he's and they've brought him in for a 30 visit, and they've sat across the table from him. They've looked him in the eye. He's interacted with his new teammates in the cafeteria, and they're comfortable with all that good stuff, the same way they would be with Tyler Booker. Who does general manager Seth Payne take?
I'm general manager Seth Payne, who's much more short-sighted than general manager Nick Caserio. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, Tyler Booker primarily has played left guard. He's played some right guard, but on the in the short term, I almost feel like, okay, I want the best possible offensive line in year one, which is the dumbest reason to draft somebody. I think Josh Simmons would have a chance to actually start at left tackle and maybe end up being better than Cam Robinson as a left tackle. Mm-hmm. So, and that is a big franchise swinging move. I'd take Josh Simmons.
Okay.
With all the concerns about his patellar tendon. Because even if he looks healthy at his pro day, that's not the same as playing week in and week out at it. It also, now it helps too that Josh Simmons, it was his left knee.
Okay.
Which matters because your power leg as a left tackle is your right leg.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit less concerned about it. I'm taking Josh Simmons in that scenario.
You swerved me a little bit. I thought when you were kind of mentioning right guard for Tyler Booker, I thought you were going to go, well, you could plug him in at right guard right away. You know, plug and play kind of thing. So you swerved.
I swerved myself. That's what you get with Seth Payne as the general manager. It really inspires confidence in your staff when there's 5 minutes left on the clock and I'm saying, boy, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
I'm really feeling Tyler Bookier here, but, oh, I start pulling a Tony Romo.
Jimmy!
Josh Simmons.
Matthew Golden and Kelvin Banks, 5 mocks apiece. Matthew Golden's the one I'm talking myself into. I'm talking myself into the excitement of shiny new toys with the 25th overall pick.
And speed. Unadulterated speed.
That's it, man. Yes.
Yeah, I think he just ran a. Did he run a 4.30? Whatever it was.
He ran fast.
Impressive number.
Yeah, he ran
fast. I like the unadulterated speed. The Ohio State Pro Day, by the way, is March 26th.
Okay.
So with Josh Simmons, if he works out at his Pro Day and looks really good, I looked and searched, and this I got frustrated. I wanted to know whether it was a partial patellar tendon tear or a full tear that. And only because I've got experience with having a partial patellar tendon tear. Mm-hmm. It was a pain in the ass, but it was a relatively simple recovery. You know, we've seen Yordan Alvarez had 2 partial tears.
Yeah.
And he's come back, and he's done pretty well for himself as a professional athlete.
I'd say so.
It's so hard to find complete information because you've still got NFL or I've still see actual professional writers out there saying he suffered an ACL last year.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah.
It's not an ACL. Yeah.
It's a big difference, man.
Big difference.
The pro day, the March 26th pro day, which would end up being what, Tuesday or Wednesday of next week?
Yeah, that would be the 28th is Friday, so it'd be Wednesday next week. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Wednesday next week. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer, text line. Good morning, guys. I asked my Jaguars friend, it says no one's perfect, about Cam Robinson, and he said, get used to penalties and get used to post-game fit posts on Instagram. I looked it up, and he was close to Tunsil and penalties. I guess this can be more tolerable when he's not the captain of the team and the highest-paid player dictating the culture of the line, but I've not heard anyone mention this. Thoughts?
Thank you. Very good point there. I didn't know about the Instagram post-game fit stuff because, that's something that does not resonate well in the fan base, especially after losses. He's not a good run blocker either. I feel like they kind of swapped out for a less expensive version of Laremy Tunsil in a lot of ways. He's not nearly as good as Laremy Tunsil, the sum total of it. But he's on a one-year deal. And there's nothing about Cam Robinson right now that screams, oh, yeah, this is the guy that they replaced Laremy Tunsil with.
No,
They want to go into the draft without feeling overly panicked about any deficits on their roster.
Yep.
And I think by and large they've done that pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to go into the draft feeling that even subconsciously you don't feel like you might press or push to get a guy to fill a hole because you know that you know how much randomness there is in the draft. If you're an actual GM that's been doing it for a while You don't think that, oh, yeah, I'm going to draft a guy and he's going to be a day one starter for the next 10 years. There's just too much randomness to it. And I think that's what Cam Robinson is. You go into the draft thinking, all right, we've got options here. If we had to, Tytus Howard could play left tackle. Tytus Howard can play guard. We got to hope that Blake Fisher develops. But we've got at least three viable offensive tackles. So that's what I'm looking at Cam Robinson right now. Don't write his name in ink at left tackle. There's a chance that it... I think it's most likely that it'll be him day one, but there's also a good chance that it'll be a first-round draft pick. There's a chance it could be Blake Fisher. There's a chance it could be Tytus Howard.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's penned in for anything yet on the line this year, for sure. All right, we're off and running here on a Friday. Good to be with you. Appreciate you joining us here on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. Headlines are up next. Got a couple Astro headlines. Rockets going for 9 in a row, and day one of the tournament is in the books. The Cougs smoked them yesterday. We'll get to that. Coming up next in headlines. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to it. The headlines. Let's start with, we'll get to March Madness in just a second. Let's just start real quickly with the Astros. This came down towards the end of our show yesterday, but as good as things have been going with Lance McCullers, knock on wood, the opposite is true right now with Luis Garcia. Scratched from line batting practice yesterday with elbow soreness. And I guess the thing about this, Seth, is this is not the first hiccup that Luis Garcia has experienced since his Tommy John surgery back in 2023. He went to the minor leagues last June for a rehab assignment and got shut down in August. He got shut down, I think, or at least there was another red flag somewhere along the way as well. The bottom line is, where he is right now, elbow soreness, scratched with that, and Luis Garcia just can't get out of first gear in his recovery here.
Yeah, and you know, Chandler Rome pointed this out that there seemed to be, I you know, compared to other franchises, I don't follow their rehab schedules and processes all that closely. But I know Chandler has either hinted at or suggested that it feels like sometimes with their rehab process with pitchers, there seem to be more setbacks than others. And you got to factor Lance McCullers into that, where I think Lance just in general gets injured or has setbacks
a lot. He's been a walking setback for his whole career. So, yeah.
I know. As much as I adamantly always want to feel and believe that with Luis Garcia, it's always just, hey, it's steady as she goes. Like, no drama with Luis Garcia. But, man, he's had a lot of setbacks throughout this duration. And I've never once thought, like, oh, yeah, you gotta just expect and plan that Luis Garcia is going to be right there at some point this season and then finish strong on a playoff push. He's still off to the side in my plans for the season.
Yeah, that's what makes the you know, I see reports out there like, oh, and they could get Christian Javier back by August or something. Like, I'm not counting on anything from Christian Javier this year, just based on how some of these rehabs have gone with some of these other guys. You can't count on that at all. So we're 6 days away from opening day. The other thing with the Astros to report, we mentioned it in the open of the show, Dana Brown on Astro Line last night, the Astros team show. Over on our competitor over on 790, regarding Cam Smith, last night said, make no mistake, I'm not afraid to put this guy in the big leagues. This might be the biggest thing that people are watching in Houston sports over the next 3 or 4 days is the final roster. I can't think of anything that's bigger right now in Houston sports in terms of, like, waiting for a tweet. There's no signing that we're waiting on or a trade. I'm not saying it won't happen with the Texans because Nick is really good at throwing curveballs, but I'm not waiting on anything here with the Texans. The Rockets are just playing basketball right now. The Cougs are just playing basketball right now in terms of, like, what we're waiting to see, news, the
right,
white smoke.
Right.
You know,
look, we know that the Cougs are going to play on Saturday.
That's right.
We know they're going to play Gonzaga, but we don't know what the Astros are actually going to look like on opening day.
Yeah.
There's an element of a suspense there involving Cam Smith.
Yeah.
I guess the other one that's waiting in the wings a little bit in terms of the entire beginning of the season is, all right, I'm trying to be calm, cool, and collected baseball fan who, like, hey, don't pay too much attention to spring training results, but Ronel Blanco has not looked like the best version of Ronel Blanco. And I'm trying real hard to be the guy that says, if you read too much into pitcher performance in spring training, then you don't know baseball. I'm trying real hard to be that guy right now.
He's
but on the inside, I'm dying a little bit in anticipation over Ronel Blanco.
You know how it works with pitchers, Seth. When they're doing well, we go, look at this. This guy's going to be something. And when they're doing poorly, they're just working on things.
They're working on something, right. You don't know baseball if you're worried
about
this.
That's right. Rockets are going for 9 in a row tonight in Miami, and it looks, Seth, like we are getting Amen Thompson back for this game. Listed as probable yesterday for this game tonight against the Miami Heat, which means we get Amen versus Tyler Hero 2.0 tonight.
Yeah, and a lot of the real rough stretch they had that ended with this current winning streak, so much of it was hard to make excuses completely and totally, because they were facing good teams, but they were also facing good teams while dealing with injuries. Mm-hmm. And and it's a team that hasn't been as consistent throughout the season as you'd like to see. But man, it's you can't sit here and look at this win streak and act like, all right, they're not a scary basketball team in some way.
Yeah.
So Amen Thompson being available is very, very nice.
Nice tonight. So they go for 9 in a row in Miami tonight. The Celtics got sold yesterday. This came down right at the end of our show. $6.1 billion.
That's football money right there.
Well, I was just going to say, for some context. Now, granted, this is a blue blood franchise, so there's that within their sport. They're the defending champions, so they're, you know, they're getting sold at their at a peak, you know, at a peak spike on their chronology here. I think the important things to know here are, one, Tillman Fertitta bought the Rockets for $2.2 billion,
and that was a record.
Just 7 years ago or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the high watermark.
Was it?
So that was what I believe.
Yeah.
Fact check me on that, but I believe that was the highest price paid.
Yeah.
That's
6.1, which is the other thing. It was $500 million $50 million. $50 million more. God, we get into these billions instead of millions. $50 million more than the Commanders. Like you just said, Seth, NFL money. It went for slightly more than the Washington Commanders did. So this is the most that any American-based sports team has ever gone for. $6.1 billion.
These are the records, actually, for the highest paid. I think at the time, Tillman's might have been a record. Celtics, $6.1 billion. Okay. Then it goes Commanders, Broncos, the Phoenix Suns, and the Mercury combined was $4 billion in 2023.
Yep.
The Mavericks sold for $3.5 billion.
Okay.
The Hornets, $3 billion. So basketball has been basketball. There just haven't been that many football big. I guess the Rockets were the highest at the time in 2019, and it's been surpassed by a couple of NBA.
Are the Clippers on that list when Ballmer bought them?
They're not the Clippers for $2 billion in 2014. So it's steadily been going up a little bit, but then this jumps light years up ahead. The big thing about NBA teams is that the arenas tend to be way more versatile. You can use them for more things more often for revenue. There's a lot more value above and beyond just the sport in the NBA. And then obviously the international stuff is huge with the NBA.
Yeah, the Fertittas control the Toyota Center, which makes the story of a non-Fertitta billionaire wanting to bring hockey to Houston a very, very saucy story, which we'll get to later in the show. But Friedkin, I think it's Dan Friedkin from Friedkin Companies, owns Gulf States Toyota, billionaire. He's all of a sudden emerged as a strong option to bring an NHL team here, but he doesn't control the building where theoretically an NHL team would play. He would be a tenant if they were to play at Toyota Center. Who knows? Maybe he's got designs on building a hockey arena somewhere. You know, you never know with that. $6.1 billion for the Celtics. Meanwhile, the Cougs yesterday, let's make sure we hit the Cougs here in headlines. They win by 38, 78-40, a classic mollywhopping of a 16 seed by a 1 seed. This thing was never close from jump, and this looked like the Cougs were playing five kids they pulled off that court outside Toyota Center right there to go play.
Yeah, you know, sometimes with an NCAA basketball team, you almost kind of like them to have a scare early in the tournament to remind them that you got to scrap your way through this entire thing. I feel like Houston's scare was early in the season with those several losses very early on, and then ever since then, they've played like a team that knows very well that if they don't, if they're not dialed in, they can get upset. They face Gonzaga, and Gonzaga's not it's not your traditional Gonzaga team that you see in the tournament, because they're actually not that great at shooting threes.
Yeah.
So that's a but for any team that's willing to shoot a bunch of threes, that's where I always get nervous. Is the Cougs are a 5.5-point favorite, but they're not going to be sleeping on Gonzaga.
That's a dangerous 8 seed right there, man.
Yeah, they're probably underseeded. Yeah. It's kind of bogus that they're facing them this early, but whatever.
Beat Georgia by 21 yesterday. Your Aggies. It's probably felt good, Seth. Your Aggies beating up on an Ivy League team not named Cornell last night.
Yeah, Yale. Bunch of punks.
Beat Yale.
Bunch of little do-good, wannabe, whatever they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just beat the snot out of Yale. Led by Pharrell Payne.
Yeah.
No relation, no. As far as I know.
No. No relation, no resemblance, no nothing. But he was really good, man. He was. The Aggies crashed the boards. That's a tough, gritty team. Biggest story yesterday felt like it was the manager of the McNeese State team, that Amir Ora Khan.
Got an NIL deal, did he not?
He's got a few of them. He's got an NIL. He's got a, his big gimmick is he leads the McNeese State team out of the locker room with a gigantic boombox, kind of like the dude in San Francisco used to do with the 49ers. And he's been able to get companies to sponsor the boombox, Tick Pick and Buffalo Wild Wings. I like it. There was a few people on my Twitter timeline this morning that were haters on Amir Khan. Man, kid's just a college kid trying to make money. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Those are your headlines. All right, superlatives for the Texans this offseason so far. Best move, worst move, swarmiest move, most intriguing, glaring remaining need. We'll run through these as we head into the 7 o'clock hour coming up next.